I'm Matt Ryan. Welcome to the Matt Men YouTube channel, and we're going to be going through the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame ballot for 2022. I've got a copy of it right here, and I'm going to give you my picks. The first one comes from the historical category, and it's Bob Armstrong. Bob Armstrong as a draw, as a talent, whether it was as the what we, a lot of our generation, knew him as from Smoky Mountain Wrestling, being the matchmaker, constantly at war with whether it be the Dirty White Boy or Jim Cornette, or even being on Jim Cornette's side in the 1990s, or going all the way back to the first Georgia War being in the 1970s with All South, everybody moving to All South. He was one of the few, I think the only member of the roster who stayed there. That piece of history, also just him being a draw in Georgia, in Southeast, in Continental, being one of those last generation of true territory stars existing through all of those decades, a WWE Hall of Famer, of course, the father of Brad Armstrong and Brian Armstrong, the Road Dog, and so many others within that family tree, that he deserves a spot in the Hall of Fame, in my opinion. Jack and Jerry Briscoe, as a tag team, were one of the major draws for the first Starrcade. Their relevance in Florida and in Georgia, especially when we talk about the second Georgia War, also known as Black Saturday, their interests in Georgia Championship Wrestling and their interests as being a team really, really set a standard in the 1970s and 80s. And you could put Jack and Jerry in individually, but as a tag team, I do believe they should go in. And when we look through the rest of this list, Sputnik Monroe, he helped redefine and honestly define what it meant to be a heel in the 1950s, 60s. What he did in Memphis, there's a great documentary about Sputnik Monroe's contributions to the wrestling industry in Memphis Heat, and for what he did for civil rights in pro wrestling and in Memphis during the segregated South, during Jim Crow, I think slots him into the Hall of Fame no matter what, because when we look at the impact he had on the business and the way that all ran through, you deserve a spot for that, in my opinion. I think the historical significance of a person's value to the history of pro wrestling matters as much to what they did in the ring. And, you know, one of the first draws in the New York territory as a tag team, Miguel Perez and Argentino Rocca, the riot in the garden with the Valiant Brothers, being a comic book character, being one of the main draws back when Capitol Wrestling, the original Capitol Wrestling, and Vince McMahon's first promotional endeavors with Toots Mont being the draw inside Madison Square Garden, being one of the biggest names in the Northeast. That alone, I believe, quantifies them to be Hall of Famers. And then the people who were dance partners with Jack and Jerry Briscoe at the first Starrcade, Ricky Steamboat and Jay Youngblood, they had such a short time together as a tag team. But if Jay Youngblood sadly doesn't pass away in the mid-1980s, I can see them doing another run. I can see them hopefully, potentially, when Steamboat comes back to the NWA or even in the WWF in 1987, 88, after Steamboat's run as Intercontinental Champion, them going up against the Hart Foundation, going up against some of those tag teams, or even going back to the NWA to face Blanchard and Anderson. There were so many undone things that just couldn't have happened because Jay Youngblood passed away. But within that time frame, they, alongside Ric Flair, were the undeniable draws in Mid-Atlantic. And that feud with Jack and Jerry shot them up into the stratosphere. I think they belong for what they meant to that first Starrcade card, which really set the pace for what became a golden era of professional wrestling in the 1980s. Going into the modern performer section, Junkyard Dog. Like, what he did in Mid-South, set against any other territory draw of the day, is insane. What he meant to that territory, what he meant to the city of New Orleans, what he meant as a whole to the business of Mid-South. And when he left, they kept trying to search for him. It was like the Bulls trying to find the next Michael Jordan. You just couldn't do it. No matter who you put in there, no matter what you did, you could not replace what JYD meant to that territory. And then his work in the WWF, being one of the upper echelon guys, being one of the first characters in the quote-unquote rock and wrestling era, in being in the cartoon, there's so many things that label him as a Hall of Famer. And I get the WCW run and everything leading up to his untimely passing, but he was a draw. He was one of the most, iconic names in a period where drawing houses, putting an ass every 18 inches every single night mattered more than anything. And when you have lightning in a bottle like that and you don't recognize it in a Hall of Fame, I find that to be slightly ridiculous. So I put JYD on my hypothetical ballot. Kevin Nash and Scott Hall. I feel like I don't have to go in depth on this one. The NWO changed the business, and when they moved from the WWF to WCW, the ripple effects that did for the entire industry, whether it, when it comes to contracts, whether it comes to the angle with the NWO, everything that Kevin Nash and Scott Hall did as a tag team from 1996 to 1998 redefined the business. And I think that that, and obviously it's a posthumous honor. I think Scott Hall and Kevin Nash deserve to be in there, even though Scott Hall did pass away. We recently just had his birthday and sadly the passing of Tristan Nash, but those guys deserve to be in the Hall of Fame for that. Paul Orndorff was a top guy in Mid-South, top guy in Georgia. His feud with Hulk Hogan could have sold out the Pontiac Silverdome. The big event, the Saturday night's main event cage match, there were so many things during that feud that was one of the biggest money-drawing feuds in the history of the WWF. Paul Orndorff, another posthumous name that we'd have to add to this list, but he deserves to be there for that feud with Hogan alone. Hogan didn't do that on his own. He did that big business because of what he did with Paul Orndorff and not just because he was Hulk Hogan. So in my opinion, he goes in there. And my next pick, Randy Orton. Despite what you will think of Randy Orton before the last few years, 20 years of being a top guy is a rarity in this industry, no matter the decade. And the ability of which he's been able to reinvent himself in the ring, reinvent his personality, finding himself becoming what seems to be an overall better talent, better person, better influence in the locker room. The work he did alone over the last few years has been Hall of Fame worthy. And you look at everything that he's done before that, his feuds with Mick Foley, his feud with Mick Foley alone was Hall of Fame worthy. The match they had at Backlash is one of the best matches, and I think Foley said it's probably the best match of his career. So I put Randy Orton in there as a quantifiable Hall of Famer. And then Rick and Scott Steiner. Come on. It's the Steiner brothers. What they did in the NWA, in New Japan, in WCW, in the WWF as a tag team is Hall of Fame worthy. The opponents they had, going back to their initial feud with the Nasty Boys, late 80s, early 90s, their match at Halloween Havoc's one of my favorite pay-per-view matches of all time. And I think that they definitely belong on the list. And I'm also kind of sad that they didn't have that kind of feud again with the Nasties and WCW when they were all there in the mid-90s. But I digress. When we move on, when it comes to Japan, I think Riki Choshu and Animal Haraguchi belong in there. So does Hayabusa. Manami Toyota and Toshiyama Yamada definitely belong in there for their gifts and what they provided to the industry. Hayabusa, another person, much like Jay Youngblood, we don't know what could have been if he doesn't get hurt. What Hayabusa could have been to this industry could have redefined aerial wrestling. We could have had someone who did what we see now from Blake Christian, from, you know, Leo Rush, from all these great athletes. Hayabusa was pushing what that could be in the late 90s, early 2000s. The what could have been just always bothers me. And that's why I always push for those, because we don't know what it could have been, but we shouldn't slight them for what they did while they were here and the importance that they had after their careers or after their time on this planet has been done. So for me, Hayabusa's a layup vote for that. We go to the Europe, Asia, New Zealand, Pacific Islanders, and Africa. I have one vote here. Actually, no, I have two votes here. First one is Big Daddy. What he meant to world of sport, what he meant to joint promotions, Brian Dixon, and the world of British wrestling is undeniable. I know that Alan Sheepshot has been pushing for Big Daddy to go into this Hall of Fame for years, and I echo that sentiment. He may not have been the greatest worker of all time, but it's not just about what you do in the ring. It's the effect you have on the business, the effect you have on the industry, and what he meant to United Kingdom wrestling fans. And that's the same thing for Spiros Arion. What he did in Australia for Jim Barnett made it into the biggest promotion in the world in the 1960s and 70s. The work that Spiros Arion did on top in Australia set the pace for modern television wrestling. What we know now, what has evolved into what we see on our TVs every single week. And that should not be discarded or looked at because it was 50 years ago and we don't have as much tape of it as we should. And also, if you don't subscribe to Crispy Lettuce or Armstrong Alley's Google Drive, you are doing yourself a huge disservice. There's a lot of great Australia on there, a lot of great wrestling featuring a lot of the names on this list. It's only $10. I suggest you sign up for it. Now, finally, something that's near and dear to my heart, the non-wrestler division, because I'm in a manager, announcer, and promoter, and my picks are managers, announcers, and promoters. First and foremost, the Grand Wizard. You know, Ernie Roth's work, whether with the Sheik or in the World Wrestling Federation, is amazing. And he was one of the best managers, one of the guys who helps establish what it meant to be a manager, whether it was Abdul Farouk in Detroit or as the Grand Wizard in the WWWF. His work with Sergeant Slaughter, his work with superstar Billy Graham, obviously. He's a draw. He was a draw. And he talked people into those buildings. And then my second pick coincides with that. The person who set the template for what it meant to be a wrestling manager, Bobby Davis. Bobby Davis's work with Nature Boy Buddy Rogers, his work in Capitol Wrestling, is more than enough, in my opinion, for being the trendsetter, for being the person who laid the groundwork for what Bobby Heenan would later do, what the Grand Wizard would do, Jimmy Hart, everyone who picked up the mantle. Bobby Davis and Gary Hart were alike in the sense that they were talking logically, plainly, and weren't too braggadocious. And I think that Bobby Davis's accomplishments in this industry should not be overlooked because it was a bygone era. And my final picks, Reggie Parks for what he did in the world of belt making. His belts stand the test of time. They are still coveted by fans of not only my generation, the prior generation of wrestling fans, but modern wrestling fans now look at Reggie Parks' belts as the standard for championships in professional wrestling. And I think that should be recognized with enshrinement into the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame. And obviously his time in pro wrestling. If you look up the Stu Hart rib on using Reggie Parks, look that up on YouTube. Owen Hart did it. It's hilarious. And that also should be why he's in the Hall of Fame. Morris Siegel, one of the originators of the Texas Booking Office, one of the founders of Houston Wrestling, definitely belongs in there. Someone who definitely should be in the Hall of Fame. And the final one, Ted Turner. Without Ted Turner, we don't have anything resembling to modern television wrestling. Because WTCG, the station he bought, which turned into TBS, facilitated for 50 years, for five decades, since 1972, this is the 50th year of wrestling on what is now TBS. Starting with what became Georgia Championship Wrestling and World Championship Wrestling, All South, the impact it had revolving around Black Saturday. If you've not listened to the Lapsed Fan series on Black Saturday and the buyout of Georgia Championship Wrestling and the role Ted Turner played in that, in giving Mid-South TV time, in giving Championship Wrestling from Georgia Ole Anderson's upstart promotion after being, you know, taken off guard by the purchase by Vince and Linda McMahon of the majority shares of GCW. There's a lot that we have to attribute and thank Ted Turner for what he meant for the wrestling industry, buying and saving Jim Crockett Promotions. And we could talk about the laissez-faire attitude of putting people in place and all of the institutional issues with WCW. But that doesn't outweigh the importance Ted Turner had on the wrestling industry, saving WCW, saving pro wrestling on cable that wasn't the WWF, giving it a platform in prime time. Those things, with limited exception, were unheard of or not done. The impact that Georgia Championship Wrestling had because it had that Saturday 6:05 time slot, completely revolutionize what we think of pro wrestling. So for me, this is a big thing. If you like my votes, let me know in the comments. Let me know who you voted for in the comments below. And be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to Matt Men wherever you listen to podcasts. And be sure to like, comment, and subscribe to the Matt Men channel. I'll see you on December 10th. Thank you, and bye-bye.
Thanks for checking out this clip. For more, be sure to like and subscribe in addition to this channel. The Matt Men Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and it's also available on F4WOnline.com as part of the Wrestling Observer Network.